And thanks for joining us. I'm Frank Sesno with the George Washington University and host of Planet Forward. In for Diane Rehm today, she is on a cruise with public radio listeners. A recent Gallup poll found almost twice as many Americans consider themselves conservative as liberal. With more independents identifying themselves as conservative as well, the Republican Party appears poised for gains in both next Tuesday's elections and in the 2012 midterm races. But there are questions about how united Republicans really may be. Joining me in the studio to discuss the state of the GOP, Charlie Cook of the Cook Political Report, David Keene, chairman of the American Conservative Union, and former Republican Congressman Mickey Edwards. Good day to all of you.
Good morning. Hi.
Thanks for being here. Well, Charlie Cook, how will the Republicans fare in next week's elections?
Well, I think you're going to see some kind of a split decision. I mean, where it looks almost certain that they're going to win the Virginia governorship. It looks more likely than not that John Corzine, the incumbent Democratic governor, is going to get reelected in New Jersey. And then we're seeing a very weird situation in the special election, the 23rd District of New York, where it's a neck-and-neck race between the Democrat and the conservative, and the Republican candidate is dropping like a stone.
In a district, we should point out, that's been Republican in one form or another because it's been reshaped
since
a little.
Moby Dick was a Guffey.
1871. Yeah. That's more than an election or two. David Keene?
That's right.
Your prediction?
Well, I don't know that predictions are in order except in Virginia. I think it's clear that at the top, at least, that the Virginia race is broken and that the Republicans are going to win that. You know, that after the election, there'll be all this spin, and I think in a statistical sense, it will be a split decision. But I think the Democrats may have some trouble with the narrative they've developed on Virginia over the course of the last few years. Virginia was sort of one of the exhibits of a state that had turned Democratic. This was the election that was going to seal that for ever and a day. And in fact, it appears that the Republican candidates at the top of the ticket, the governor, lieutenant governor, and attorney general are going to win, and there may be it'll be interesting to see how deep that goes. The New York 23rd is, as Charlie says, perhaps the most interesting race. It is a Republican district, but it goes to the question that you mentioned as you opened the program, and that is the identification between conservatives and Republicans.
Right.
Republicans destroyed their brand. One of the misreadings of the electorate.
They destroyed their brand?
In 2006, 2008, or at least damaged it severely. And that still shows up in the polls. The Obama forces misread the election, I think, because they thought that it was a rejection not just of the Republican Party, but of conservative values.
But what do you mean they destroyed their brand? Explain that.
Well, the Republican Party is viewed by the public, or has been, as the party of fiscal responsibility, small government, lower taxes, less spending. The Republican majority in the Congress, in concert with the Bush administration, reversed field on all of those things and acted more like the Democrats than they did like what people thought the Republicans would be, and didn't recognize the severity of that problem until those elections took place. And there's some question, and New York really is a shakeout on whether they still get it, if you will. So what you've got in New York is a situation in which, as the Weekly Standard put it, they may have nominated the single most liberal House candidate ever nominated by the Republicans anywhere, anytime. The Conservative Party in New York, and of course the Conservative Party's ability to succeed is unique to New York because it's the only state in which a candidate can accumulate votes on more than one line, decided to nominate their own candidate, and that candidate is now either a point or so ahead or a point or so behind, with the Republican losing by the day.
Mickey Edwards, you've had all sorts of perspectives on this, and now your perspective is a step back from the canvas. What's your take on the state of the Republican Party as we go into this cycle?
Well, you know, Frank, it's hard to draw too many conclusions. It is true that it appears that Republicans are going to win in Virginia in the governor's race and maybe other races. But that race is not really being fought on conservative versus liberal principles. In fact, the Republican candidate got in a little trouble for some of the things he had said. Yeah, they were very conservative early on in his career.
His thesis was dug up. It was considered to be anti-feminist.
And what happened was that he turned his campaign to those things that people in Virginia really care about, which is about transportation, job creation, and so forth, which is the way a candidate ought to run. Republicans are going to win in Virginia and still have a chance to win in New Jersey as well. But that, too, is being fought more on questions of competence in the Corzine administration. So it's hard to draw too many conclusions from that. But, you know, the question is, and I think Dave touched on this, the country is more conservative than not, but it's hard to know what the Republican Party is, whether the Republican Party stands for anything other than just winning the next election.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Is the Republican Party about, at this moment, about winning Mickey Edwards or about governing?
I think the Republican Party stopped thinking about governing a long time ago.
It
started with Gingrich. It started on, you know, turning the Republican Party into a nonstop campaign machine, you know, even when they controlled government. And I think, here's the disconnect. You would think, because there's starting to be some backlash against Obama and against the Democrats in Congress, and people still think of themselves as conservative, but we don't yet see that that's going to work to the benefit of the Republican Party. That doesn't mean people are saying, okay, we now trust the Republicans to have power.
Charlie and David Keene, weigh in on this idea that the Republican Party stopped being about governing and is about winning and not much more than that. Charlie, your perception?
Before the show, I was telling Mickey, I find it easier getting to being an independent every year. I mean, because I'm kind of despairing of both parties, and so I can throw rocks at one, but then I turn and look at the other side. I think Republicans may have a very good election next year, but I'm not sure whether they're ready yet, because I'm not sure if they've spent enough time in the wilderness. That, you know, after their losses, after their losses of 06 and 08, there seems to be a remarkably little amount of introspection.
When I was far outside the Beltway last week, somebody said to me, like I knew this, you know, said, well, what do they actually stand for? What does the Republican Party actually want to do? Where are their new ideas? And this was somebody, if I'm not mistaken, who's kind of been a swing voter over time and seems to be legitimately curious.
I think what they've done, and David should speak to this, but I think what happened was they've scapegoated President Bush, John McCain, the recession.
Who?
Republicans, in terms of blaming for their losses, so that they really haven't gone through a period of where did we go wrong? Where did we screw up over the years that David was talking about? And so I'm not sure they've worked through their problems, even though they may come out and do very, very well next year.
There are two things that you can count on from politicians. The first is that when they lose, it's not their fault. and that's what went on after 2006 and even after 2008. After 2006, the White House blamed the Congress. The Congress blamed the White House. They all said that if they were all doing the right things, but somebody else messed it up, and therefore there wasn't much to learn from it. The other thing that you can count on is that winning politicians always misread the reasons for their victory. They always conclude the day after the election that the public wants all the things they want.
Yeah, and they were about to have this dramatic realignment.
Right, they go out, and this is a human characteristic of politicians, not a Democratic or Republican characteristic. They go out and try to do all the things that they think the public wanted them to do. That's what Barack Obama has done, and finds out shortly that they didn't. And then the two-party system that we have, that's one of the reasons that the party that's counted out on Inauguration Day tends to come back within a year or so because of the mistakes of the other party. Then you get to Charlie's broader point, which is, have the Republicans really gotten their act together? I think the Republican base knows what it stands for. The question is whether the Republican leadership is in sync with the Republican base or indeed with the voters. The introspection that goes on after a loss, and this again takes place in both parties, is that since they all know it wasn't their fault, they say, well, it must be something about the party. It must be something about our beliefs. You'll remember after 2006, 2008, we had some Republicans saying the problem is
this idea of small government, limited government, people won't buy that. These are people who've never been to a Tea Party. It's precisely not the new ideas, but the old ideas that have come back to the fore that are fueling this Republican resurgence.
Mickey Edwards, new ideas?
Well, the thing that was so embarrassing about the last campaign, the last presidential campaign, was, Republicans had always been the party of ideas. Whether it was during the Reagan years, the Goldwater years, the creation of the Heritage Foundation, all those things, Republicans were the people who were coming up with new ideas. And in the last campaign for president, Republicans ran a very anti-intellectual campaign. I mean, our basic philosophy was let Joe the plumber fix it. And it was really an embarrassing thing. And so, what has to happen is Republicans have to get back and say, here is our conservative philosophy. What does that mean in terms of governing? What does it mean in terms of addressing problems in the country?
Are we hearing that, Charlie Cook, in the cycle and the special elections that we've got now and in the warm-up for 2012?
Well, I mean, I think the problem with trying to extrapolate three odd-year elections to the next one is that from a distance you can overly simplify and make these grand statements.
No, I know that, but what Mickey is saying, is that maybe you'd start to hear rumblings of this intellectual premise for the Republican Party and for the alternatives that it stands for.
What I see happening, and I've been here 37 years, these guys have been here longer. Frank, you've been around forever.
Oh, thanks a lot.
He's trying to make himself a young guy.
It's a compliment. There's very little new, really new, that ever takes place. But I think we see something in the Republican Party right now that I've never seen in either party. And that is you've got a core base in the party that detests the opposition leader and the entire agenda of the Democratic Party. But at the same time, they have total contempt for their own party's leadership and establishment. And I've never seen anything like that before.
We want you to join our conversation with your ideas on the Republican Party, where it's going, where it's headed, and other questions political. You can call us at 1-800-433-8850. You can email us at drshow@wamu.org. Our conversation with our distinguished panel about the future of the Republican Party will continue. You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Welcome back to the Diane Rehm Show. I'm Frank Sesno, sitting in for Diane today. Our discussion, the state and the future of the Republican Party. Our guests, David Keene, chairman of the American Conservative Union, Charlie Cook, editor and publisher of the Cook Political Report, and Mickey Edwards, who is, among other things, vice president of the Aspen Institute, visiting professor at the George Washington University, and a former Republican congressman, author of Reclaiming Conservatism. Gentlemen, we were talking earlier about some of the broad strokes and some of the special elections coming and what we might extrapolate from them in the coming cycle. Let us talk for a minute about this special election in upstate New York. Charlie, this is not something that everybody around the country would be following closely, so let me let you start with something of a background or a primer, and then let's go into what it really means.
Well, John McHugh was the Republican congressman from this district. He was nominated by President Obama to be the Secretary of Army. And so back in the summer, there was this process for each party to pick their candidates. And in each side, the county party leaders within that congressional district selected their own candidate. And back in July, this was at a time when, at least in the Northeast particularly,
Republicans felt like they were under siege, and they felt like they needed to nominate someone who a conservative couldn't win, so we've got to do a pragmatic, moderate thing. And so they nominated Didi Scozzafava, I can't ever pronounce that right, who was a state legislator,
an assemblywoman,
yeah, who was pro-choice, pro-gay marriage, pro-card check, and pro-stimulus package.
And now, they did this because they felt that she is the moderate in this district is now what it would take to win.
She was almost immediately endorsed by the SIEU and by Daily Kos.
Yeah, now, the thing is, all the contenders for that nomination raised their hand and promised that they would support whoever was chosen. You know, and so then they nominate this very liberal assemblywoman, and so one of the other contenders, Doug Hoffman, accountant, decided to seek the conservative party line, got the conservative party line. So what you have is you have a Democratic candidate, a liberal Republican candidate,
and a conservative
candidate with the conservative party line, and the Republican candidate, very liberal, she's dropped like a stone. The conservative has pulled up so that it's plus or minus a couple points between the conservative and the Democrats. We have a neck-and-neck race, and the Republican candidate, as I said, just dropping through the floor.
And what's interesting, David Keene, is a lot of national figures, yourself included, have gotten involved in one way in this race, to include Sarah Palin, who endorsed the conservative candidate, Doug Hoffman, said this is where the GOP's future is.
It's more than Sarah Palin. I guess I was the first person I'd written to the Congress, to Republican members of Congress right after the nomination, and suggested they should not be giving money to this candidate to the Republican candidate, because they were getting their money largely from conservative contributors, and they were going to give it to the most liberal candidate one could imagine.
So you got involved?
I got involved early. Fred Thompson was the first major figure. He flew up to New York to endorse Doug Hoffman. Since then, Hoffman has been endorsed by, as you mentioned, Sarah Palin, Mike Huckabee, Tim Pawlenty, and a whole variety of others.
And
within the House, the only member of the leadership that did not go along with the Scozzafava endorsement was Mike Pence of Indiana, who has pointedly refused to give her money.
And what about Newt Gingrich?
Newt Gingrich, the two Republican conservatives who were trotted out by the leadership to say, no, we have to do this, were first Jeb Hensarling, former head of the Republican Study Committee, who said he just didn't understand. And it was probably a mistake. The second was Newt Gingrich, who we must remember was also the fellow that was trotted out some years ago by the Bush administration to defend the prescription drug plan against conservative assault, arguing at that time that any conservative who opposed it could never thereafter call themselves a conservative. Newt went up and sort of made the point that we were talking about and that Mickey was talking about. Newt said, look, this isn't about beliefs. This is about winning. And engaged in the same kind of static analysis that economists engage in when they talk about the effect of a tax cut, that if we can keep all the Republicans and get some liberals, we win.
You think he's on the wrong side of this?
He's on the wrong side.
Mickey Edwards, here's what Newt Gingrich said. I'll quote from him. If you seek to be a perfect minority, you'll remain a minority. That's not how Reagan built his revolution or how he won back the House in 1994.
Well, you know, I don't know what to say about Newt. Newt's whole philosophy, I mean, Newt's not a conservative or a liberal. Newt is about winning power. And
He's a partisan gladiator.
He is a partisan, and I think he doesn't really care, you know, what the philosophy is, as long as they're in charge.
You don't think he cares what the philosophy is?
No, Newt is not. Newt is not somebody who thinks in terms of principles. He's somebody who thinks in terms of power.
Well, let me just jump in here, because I spent a lot of years covering Ronald Reagan, who is often held up as the standard bearer of the conservative movement. And Ronald Reagan actually was a pragmatist. And Reagan would say, you can go flying off the cliff with your flag flying, or you can actually get something done. So I'm wondering how much light there is here in what the leadership is saying and what Reagan himself was saying.
Well,
what you're saying.
You're in a situation, in a general sense, where both sides are right. What you say about Ronald Reagan is absolutely true. Most conservatives also have supported candidates and do support candidates who aren't 100% pure.
Absolutely.
But there are two points. One is that there are limits. And the second point is that we're at a time
when we're fighting for the definition of the Republican Party. The reason that the New York 23rd is so important, and everyone in Washington, and certainly every Republican in Congress is watching it, is because it gets to the very question of what should Republicans be doing. And that makes it a test case for this kind of a question, and it has to be answered.
Mickey Edwards, are we seeing a fight for the heart and soul of the Republican Party? Is David Keene right about that? That's what we're seeing at this moment?
Well, I don't know if it's for the heart and soul of the Republican Party, because it's one congressional district. But
he doesn't think it has a heart and soul.
Yeah, you know, right. I'm not sure, but, you know. No,
I just, for the record, want to say you're a Republican. That's all.
I am absolutely a Republican, and, you know, but I'm an American and a conservative before I'm a Republican, and I think the problem has been, you know, that Republicans for some time now have considered their party label more important than anything else. You know, I'm a Republican because of certain things I believe.
Charlie,
you know,
what's at stake in New York 23?
Well, I'm not going to extrapolate it far out, because, I mean, the thing is, first of all, I've never, as David said, I've never seen Republicans nominate somebody quite this liberal before, you know, any place where they had any possible chance of winning. And so it's a very unusual circumstance. And I also think that the Republicans were in kind of a time warp, that the time they made this decision, they thought they were making a pragmatic decision. Well, that was then, this is now. And things have changed, and I think they realize they made a mistake, but they're kind of stuck with it now.
I must say that on the big picture, it would seem to me that the Republican Party has been given more than enough ammunition to reset itself and reposition itself. I almost feel like I'm beginning to see a sort of walk-up, or what could be a walk-up, to another 1980 Reagan race, where you've got strong candidates who, if they emerge as strong candidates, who can run against tax and spend liberals. That's the way, whether it's true or not, that sets up the political debate. A $1.4 trillion deficit, an economy that, of course, the Democrats will say was handed to us in terrible shape, and they've got a strong case to be made there. But Republicans are trying to circle the wagons and make this case that you've mismanaged the recovery. So we should be, it seems to me, in the stages of a very profound and meaningful debate that really defines these two sides. Am I wrong about this?
I think you are in that debate.
You think I'm wrong?
I think we are in that debate, first within the party and then between the parties. Now, I do think that while in the course of this or any other immediate campaign, the philosophical discussions tend to get left aside and sort of devolve into symbolism. But I do think my good friend Mickey overstated the paucity of ideas among Republicans. I mean, there are people emerging, and there are alternatives, Paul Ryan in the House and a number of others who are out there with real policy, substantive proposals that don't get attention because it's the minority party right now. But they are laying the groundwork, I think, for that battle. The one thing that the Obama administration has done is given the Republican Party new life and has validated the basic principles that a lot of Republicans were beginning to doubt in the closing days of the Bush administration.
All right, so we've got some tweets here that have come to the show. Down but not out, as Democrats overreach and miscalculate on policy, says one, the GOP will rebound. Kevin says the GOP has surrendered control to the talk show hosts. We're more interested in labeling scare goats than finding solutions. Another person says, state of the GOP, conservatives are gaining ground. Poll finds independents moving to the right. Charlie, we also have seen polls, recent ones, that show the Republicans still held in pretty low esteem by a lot of people.
Well, I think that's the irony here, is that the conservative side of the equation is higher than it's been in a long time, and the Republican is lower. But what you are seeing, though, is that independents gravitated over towards the Democratic side. In 2006, they voted Democratic for Congress by an 18-point margin. Well, now they're not liking a lot of what they're seeing. So what they're seeing is they're moving out of the Democratic column back into the middle, and in some cases independently Republican. And so they're leaving the Democratic Party. You know, they're not really sort of joining up the Republican side, but they're leaving the Democratic side and creating more of a swing situation.
Mickey, this poll that I made reference to was a CNN Opinion Research Corp survey that showed the Republican Party with a favorable rating of just 36%, lowest in a decade, unfavorables of 54%.
Right. Well, add me to it, it'd be 55. See, Dave is absolutely right. There are people like Paul Ryan and others who have come forth with ideas, you know. But the party as a whole, and the leadership in the party, and even the McCain campaign, you know, did not actually put forth alternative visions. You know, it was, you know, so for people like Paul Ryan to be heard and to move their way up into a position where they actually are leading the party, you know, we're a long way from that.
One thing is perfectly natural, though, is when your party, either party, has the White House for 8 years, there's not a lot of new creative thinking, new ideas. There's not a lot of freshness that occurs. So after 8 years of Democrats, the Democratic Party typically runs out of ideas. 8 years of Republicans in the White House, Republicans run out of ideas.
Usually takes six for each party.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Good point.
I'm Frank Sesno, and you are listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Our discussion today, the state and the future of the Republican Party. If you'd like to join the conversation, we're going to start taking your calls in just a minute or two. Call us at 1-800-433-8850. Send us an email to drshow@wamu.org. We're speaking with David Keene, Charlie Cook, and Mickey Edwards. Let me ask all three of you this. We have a way of shorthanding things, and people will say, well, who are the rising stars in the Republican Party or in the conservative movement? Let me reposition that question slightly, and that is, who are those – you keep talking about fresh ideas and a sharper new agenda. Who are those – and you know the field well – who you see as having these sharp ideas or this new approach, who are capable of articulating – that and capturing the imagination of people along the way, because that is what it takes, after all. Mickey Edwards?
Well, you know, we have quite a lot of them. We don't have too many at the very top levels. We don't have a Ronald Reagan out there. But, you know, I know a lot of people, John Husted, who was Speaker of the House in Ohio and is now running for Secretary of State there, Rob McKenna, the Attorney General in Washington State. I mean, there are a lot of very sharp, articulate and creative Republicans out there in the country, and they are moving up, and they're starting to be heard. But, you know, they're not at the very top ranks of the party yet.
David?
Well, you get to the top ranks at the last minute in national politics, but there are people in the House, Jeb Hensarling, who I mentioned before,
Paul Ryan,
Mike Pence. There are people who are very thoughtful.
And what
John
they,
Campbell
and,
of California.
And what do they stand for, or what are they saying that you think is new and sort of breakout material?
Ryan is perhaps, I think, the brightest guy in the House. He focuses on economic questions, on health care questions, on tax policy, and all these
and
things.
And what's he saying?
He's saying that we can apply limited government principles to these policies and come up with solutions that are consistent with Republican and conservative values, and he does that.
So what's his health care solution?
He's introduced an entire health care plan, Bill, as have some of the others, Bill, which rely on free markets, which rely on patients making their own decisions, which do not rely on government bureaucrat-heavy kinds of answers. But the fact is, we also have people out there in the governorships. You know, you've got people like Mitch Daniels, who's not a new face in some senses, but maybe one of the best governors in the United States today, who's a very conservative governor, who has cut the burden of government in Indiana significantly. You have, frankly, a lot of people. And here goes the problem with the Republican leadership. One of the brightest young stars on the Republican firmament, in my view, is Marco Rubio, the former Speaker of the Florida House, who was term limited out, is now running for the Senate against the establishment choice, who the Republican leadership has tried to stuff down the throats of Republicans there. We had a Republican leadership who said, you know what we need? We need young, articulate, conservative, attractive Hispanics, but not this one.
Charlie, who's got the new ideas?
I would watch Ohio. I think you're going to see Republican Senate nominee is going to be Rob Portman.
Who's very good.
Who's very good. The gubernatorial nominee is going to be John Kasich. And here's a party that's been gone through so much, so horrible time last decade. And I think you're going to see a lot of excitement, a lot of energy, a lot of things happening.
And as we know, Ohio,
you don't have to
Ohio,
go back a decade in Ohio.
Ohio.
And this tells you the danger of making predictions for anybody too long in advance. 2 years ago,
the Republican Party in Ohio is considered dead.
I want to get to a phone call very quickly before we have to take
like
a quick
break.
Gary from Ohio to speak of. If I can ask you to give us your question fairly quickly, we'll get your quick answer.
Certainly. You know, I guess it's not so much a question as it is an opinion. It's, you know, from us, I guess, out here in Ohio, we see a great disconnect or a disaffection with really both parties. It's always a choice of the lesser of two evils or no choice at all. And I really see that in, you know, all of the Tea Party organizations, the mass emails that, you know, go around basically criticizing, you know, to put it bluntly, the fat cats in Washington. It's all about, I agree with, you know, winning versus, you know, what are you really going to do for me? And I think that's part of the equation that is being missed by people.
So a strong anti-Washington attitude, Mickey Edwards here.
Well, I think there is a strong anti-Washington attitude, but, you know, one of the things we have to do is start making a distinction between small government and limited government. And one of the things that's been a problem recently is, you know, nobody in our party has seemed to recognize the limits that the Constitution imposes.
Coming up, more of your calls and questions for our panel, our discussion about the present and the future state of the Republican Party and conservatism. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by the Pew Charitable Trusts, working to reform voting for U.S. military personnel and citizens overseas at pewtrusts.org, by the Gruber Family Foundation to extend the breadth and depth of NPR's international coverage, and by Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide at fordfoundation.org. This is NPR.
The Life and Legacy of Ayn Rand, a new biography of the Russian-born philosopher whose mid-20th century novels Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged extol the virtues of individual rights and laissez-faire capitalism and still spark debate. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back to The Diane Rehm Show. I'm Frank Sesno, and talking today with David Keene, Charlie Cook, Mickey Edwards about the current and future prospects of the Republican Party and the conservative movement. And, gentlemen, there's a terrific question here from one of our listeners. Comes in via email, that wonderful invention. The question that comes to mind, this listener writes, is what kind of conservatism do you mean? It seems from my limited viewpoint that social conservatism continues to decline, but fiscal conservatism, with national debts approaching $12 trillion, up almost $2 trillion since February of this year, and an economy circling the drain, that certainly can make a strong argument. Mickey Edwards, what kind of conservatism are we talking about?
Well, the kind that I grew up with and that I think we need to go back to is limited government conservatism, and is conservatism that is not so focused on how people live their individual lives, but on whether or not the government is operated smoothly, whether or not we are able to balance our budgets and so forth. And we have gotten, in my view, way too far over into trying to be intrusive government, conservatives saying, well, we have a plan for how you should live and let us tell you what it is.
David Keene, quickly, two things. That
what
well, kind
I think
of
Mickey's right, and what the Obama administration has done with its overreach has managed to focus on what I call the sweet spot of American conservatism, has refocused attention on limited government, on balance, and on all of those things, and that's why conservatism can come back.
Let me bring Nathan into this conversation. He's calling in from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hi, Nathan. Nathan, are you there? Are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead with your question.
All right. I just have two quick comments. I'm fairly young and just now getting into the political atmosphere, and it seems like the Republican Party has they've sort of gotten it confused between their affinity to business and their affinity to markets. And it looks like Bush had sort of leaned more toward businesses and sort of muddied the water there. I also wanted to mention that what seems to be the main Republican issue is that an economist, Thomas Sowell, he describes a constrained and an unconstrained vision, where the true conservative understands the constrained vision as the inability to limit legislative morality and the equality of outcomes. Ron Paul seemed to have it sort of figured out when it comes to that. I just want to get your comment on that.
All right, David Keene, let me let you start. Constrained vision, business versus market.
I think that he has a very good point there. And the fact is that it was, I forget which of the free market economists once said, the worst person to defend capitalism is a capitalist, because capitalism is not about businessmen being good. It's about a system that harnesses self-interest for the public good. And there's what develops with politicians and with all of the interests, and this isn't restricted to Republicans because everybody has their favorite businessmen. Businessmen are in the habit of trying to—
And women.
Yeah, and women are in the habit of trying to use government to increase their power over their competitors. A conservative wants the government to maintain the integrity of the market so that they and their competitors can fight it out for the public good. And that confusion is a confusion that exists more in Washington than in anywhere else because of the presence and the sort of the sociology of the city. So your caller is exactly right.
Paula from Toledo, Ohio, go ahead with your question.
Hi. Well, I am interested in the general trend that the questions have had so far because they're aligned with mine. I phoned because I was interested in finding out from the speakers what their opinion is regarding whether this situation with a sort of visionary disarray of the Republican Party is a window of opportunity for libertarians. Also, being from Ohio, I can say that we saw a lot of Ron Paul signs in the last presidential election out here, and there are a lot of Ron Paul Republicans who would really like to vote libertarian. So your thoughts on that, please.
Charlie Cook.
I think that one of the things we've seen in history is that whenever any third-party movement, whether it's a Ross Perot or any other, and libertarian I would throw in this as well, whenever any third-party movement or candidate starts to really gain ground, get traction, and move, one of the two major parties will see it, will co-opt it, will grab their issues and run with it and capitalize on it. And that's exactly what Newt Gingrich did when he embraced the themes of Ross Perot. And I think that if sort of this Ron Paul never got a significant number of votes. I mean, he has a lot of intensity, enthusiasm, but not a lot of votes. But I think if you started seeing the Republican, a lot of this enthusiasm for libertarian movement catch on, you'd start seeing some Republicans go in and grab it.
Mickey Edwards.
Well, the Republican Party, when it began to take on a conservative face, was a much more libertarian party than it is now. That was the Goldwater and the Reagan Republican Party.
That was a more libertarian Republican.
Yeah, and I don't believe that this is going to be an opening for the Libertarian Party, but I think it could be an opening for Republicans to go back and recapture their more libertarian kind of roots.
I think Mickey's got it right there, and the Libertarians, Charlie's point is that the major parties do take their ideas because it's a marketing question for them. If they're losing votes to parties that are hurting them, they're going to try and get those votes. But we talked about the 23rd in New York. The Conservative Party of New York was founded in the 60s for precisely that reason, to tell the Republicans, either you move a little to the right, or we are going to run candidates that will take you out. And it worked for a long time.
So the caller asked about whether this moment would give rise to a Libertarian Party. I'm going to ask you, might this moment give rise to a Conservative Party?
No, it can give rise to a far more traditionally conservative Republican Party than to a third party. New York's the only place where a third party has real influence, and that's the problem.
I don't think we're ever going to see a sustained third party movement because one side or the other will embrace those themes and take it away from them. But I think the key thing is you could talk about libertarianism, but if the Republican Party starts to embrace libertarianism more, they've got to give up some of the social and conservative. Being pro-life is not libertarian.
The strength of the modern conservative movement, and this is arcane history to many of your listeners, but Frank Meyer, who was the conscience of the early movement, developed what he called fusionism. The conservative movement today is exactly like it was in the 1950s. There were national defense conservatives, anti-communists as we called them then. There were social conservatives, we called them traditionalists, and there were libertarian or economic conservatives. And they overlapped in many ways, and what Frank did was develop a way where they could all work together. And that worked for a long time. But he said famously in the early 60s, he said, we ought to fight out these differences in the basement of the White House. Unfortunately, we got there. and none of the three sides won.
But the problem is that you have to keep fighting out these differences.
You know, nothing ever changes.
And what I hear from a lot of young people when they're talking about the Republican Party is this very thing. They'd like the libertarian side without some of what they see as the judgmental side.
And some people would like the other side without the libertarian. But the dominant theme within the conservative movement, and we've been surveying people for 30 years on this question, the dominant theme is the limited government, small government, get out of our lives attitude.
Are you saying the
libertarian strain is the strongest? The others work with that.
David Keene, is it time for the Republican Party to drop its strong opposition to abortion?
No.
Opposition to gay marriage?
No. In a two-party state, which we have here, any movement, any political party is a coalition.
Is it time for the Republican Party, for example, to take another position on don't ask, don't tell?
I don't think so.
Let's go to the phones. Ryan, Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks for calling.
I wanted to call in and ask a question regarding what I've heard an ever-growing number of former colleagues of mine talk about. This is a largely Republican part of a Democratic state, but I'm hearing more people talk about Eisenhower Republicanism. Some of these people were old enough to have voted in the 50s, and they point out that, you know, it was the Eisenhower administration that built the interstate highway system that largely benefited big business as well as the defense industry. And the folks who are saying these things are saying, well, you know, Reagan was wrong, that government isn't necessarily the problem, but government can be a potential solution to problems. And I'm wondering, whatever happened to this 1950s sense of, you know, the government can be a potential player in providing services and, you know, benefiting the nation? Would it be better for the Republicans in terms of attracting middle-of-the-road people to reject some of the aspects of Reaganism and return to a previous concept?
Mickey Edwards, what about Eisenhower Republicanism and what
that
may mean?
Well, you know, what Eisenhower did was make a very important distinction between free enterprise and, you know, big corporate America. And somehow, you know, Republicans who always used to support and conservatives supported the competition between businesses, and we focused a lot on small business, in more recent years have seemed to fall in love with what anything any big corporation wanted to do and protect big corporations against being held liable for their own actions. So I think there is something to be gained from the Eisenhower years. But I want to make a point quickly about an earlier part of the conversation. You know, it's correct that what we see now is part of the tension between two competing political parties. You know, I think that's got to, James Madison was right. You know, the political party system is doing us great harm. You know, I would love to see us focus less on my club versus your club and more on principle.
But is that going to happen? Is that human nature? Is that the nature of our democracy?
It absolutely can be. Absolutely. There are more and more states where individual voters register as independents or unenrolled.
Charlie's
or
shaking
whatever.
His head no. Well, and yet the administration wants to get rid of nonpartisan elections.
Yeah, right.
Charlie
Cook. Absolutely.
I mean, the thing is, independent candidates do not generally do well. I mean, it's a rarity. And the thing is, I think people are... they're getting more cynical about the parties. I would agree with Mickey about that. But the thing is, I don't think we're ever going to have a sustained independent or third-party movement. I think it's too institutionalized. And, you know, whether we should or shouldn't is something else, but I don't think we are.
I want to bring Elliot into the conversation here. Elliot, you're calling in from Sarasota, Florida, I see.
That's correct.
Go ahead.
I am concerned about the Republican position where they express themselves as small or limited government. And they increase the military budget, they give big tax cuts to the wealthy, but I think that it's a euphemism for saying, well, we don't have enough money for social programs, and the Republican Party has expressed itself many times as being against things like Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. Like right now they're against health reform. So why not, and Frank Sesno, you as a commentator should question the constant use of small government when it's really a euphemism.
All right.
So I would like...
All right, Elliot, thank you very much. So let me take the caller's advice. Mickey Edwards, you're using euphemisms? Seriously, though, what's your response to the question?
Well, I think, first of all... you know, what we should do is be constitutionalist, and that means limited government. And the definition, you're not going to have a small government with 300 million
people. The caller's point, though, is that with this rhetoric as a backdrop, the Republicans are consistently opposing.
Well, that's not true. Republicans supported Social Security. I mean, you go back and you look at the votes in Congress when the things he's talking about were passed, there was always a lot of Republican support for those things. But that doesn't mean you have to support mismanagement.
I'm Frank Sesno, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join us in our remaining moments, our number is 1-800-433-8850. Charlie, quickly, your response to the caller's question?
Well, I think if you asked which party is closer to its roots or its principles, I'd say it's the Democratic Party is right now pretty close to what they're supposed to be, and the Republican Party has strayed a great deal. And we have sort of a two-party system, the tax and spend party and the borrow and spend party. But I wanted to throw it to David. During the break, he had a great line about where politicians think power should be.
Yeah, I'd said once that the test of a Jeffersonian is to take him, put him in Washington, ask him where the decisions ought to be made at the local level or the state level. Politicians tend to feel that decisions ought to be made wherever they are. And that's why Mickey's reference to the Constitution and to institutional structures is so important, because oftentimes it's as important to ask who ought to be making these decisions and where they ought to be made as to what they are. Whereas politicians, seeing a problem, you saw it in the federalization of thousands of crimes, carjacking and all these things. If I'm in a federal office and there's a problem, I want to go on television and say, I'm going to, by God, solve it. And oftentimes what you need is people to stand up and say, no, it's not your job.
It's a problem, but it's not our – it's a state
right.
problem.
There are problems that are not – they're not your problem.
If we're going to go to where the story is or the problems are, then let's go to Virginia for a moment, because that's where one of these big races that is taking place. I want to go to Jay in Chesapeake, Virginia. Jay, we've got just a couple of minutes left, so if you could be brief with your question, we'll try to get a good answer to you.
Thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. Go ahead.
I just have a comment. I have no questions. And my comment is, there's a couple of them. First,
well, I'm going to ask you, just be brief with
I'm
them.
I'm going to be quick.
Thanks.
I don't believe that poll. And this is the problem I have with the conservative movement and the Republicans. You look at the Tea Party Express, you look at the birther movement, and you look at the march on Washington this past summer. Where was the color? Where were the youths? How can they possibly say that they're going to pick up in the future when they can't broaden their tent? They say it's a big tent, it's a very small tent, and you have to have a very exclusive ticket to get in.
Jay, thanks very much. Mickey Edwards, this is a problem and an issue that Republicans have talked about, but Jay is talking about it very, very, very very dramatically.
Well, the Republican National Chairman, Michael Steele, has been focused on trying to broaden the party by bringing more people into it. It's something, obviously, the party does need to do. It's not going to win anything if it's just a white Southern party.
Is it as big a tent as it likes to talk about?
Well, no. But, you know, the Democratic Party is not a real big tent either. It's hard to find a conservative in the Democratic Party, too.
Yeah, but you know what the caller is saying. I mean, you're going to find different ages and ranges, and it's one of the reasons why the Democrat conventions are so much fun to cover, because you've got all these different factions yelling and screaming at one another.
You've been going to the wrong parties.
Yeah.
Well, I like I like covering the Republican conventions too. But David Keene, what about this? What about expanding the base?
It's always important to expand the base, not by quotas, not by counting how many people are at a meeting of one sort.
Then how do you do it?
You do it by appealing to people on shared values. And, for example, among Hispanic Americans, there are a great many shared values that Republicans are and can appeal to. That's why Marco Rubio is so important in Florida.
Charlie Cook, I'm going to give you the last word. We've got Election Day coming. We're sort of in this cycle. We didn't even start to talk about Sarah Palin and presidentials. What are you watching for?
Well, I would just caution people, don't draw too many conclusions off of what happens next week. The closer you look, the more weird factors are involved. Two of the three races involve three candidates. Two of them are Republicans in two of the three races. Two months from now, we're not going to be talking about what happens 2 weeks from now.
A year is a political lifetime.
It certainly is, but we will never stop us from watching and trying to figure it all out. Charlie Cook, Mickey Edwards, David Keene, thanks to you very much. Great conversation.
Thank you.
I'm Frank Sesno. You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, and Denise Couture. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Anisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR, National Public Radio.